This is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Welcome to another episode of the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Thanks for joining me live here on Real Liberty Media. If you'd like to join the conversation, come over to reallibertymedia.com. Get in the chat room there. Say hello to folks. Check out what they have to say, man. They always have some great links and great information to share. Matter of fact, just before I came live tonight, I got a bunch of information that I'm going to review and probably do at least one show on in the future. So that'll be kind of awesome. I wanted to talk about like little annoyances. Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay. I wanted to talk about like solving little annoyances because I solved one today and it was kind of crazy. I've always kind of had this thing, like if something is bothering me, like something usually mechanical, it's like I get rid of it, like figure out how to fix it. I'll give you an example. Way back when I was in college and we didn't have a lot of money, we had the cheapest damn can opener, you know, and you probably remember them. Not the little ones that work, like you take camping with you, it goes in your pocket. And yeah, they're a hassle, but they get the job done and they don't take up a lot of space. I'm talking about the hand crank ones, the cheap metal ones that, you know, you struggle with to open a can. And man, I could only do like a couple days of that piece of crap. And even though the other ones were really expensive, I would go get a really good can opener so that, you know, when I open a can, it's easy. Well, so in the last year, probably 2 years ago, I bought an air compressor. Now, why I haven't taken care of this before now, I don't know. But the damn thing had like, I want to say 4-inch wheels, but they were probably 6-inch wheels. And so when you grab the handle to tote that thing behind you to wherever you're going to take it, it was such a struggle. Like if you lift it up too high, the ass end of the tank would hit the ground, and you know, so you couldn't lift it up very high. You could only lift it up so high, and you know, then you're just walking stupid because you can't lift the dang thing up. You know, so you're standing normally and toting this thing behind you. So today I went and got 10-inch wheels and put those on that thing. And it made it so much better to haul around because, you know, a lot more height. Okay, so if you go from 6 to 10, it's a 4-inch difference and a 2-inch difference in height. And believe me, it was enough, like just to make it easier to pull around. And of course, bigger tires go over like rough terrain easy. So if I have to haul it down to the implement building, you know, to fill tractor tires or whatever, truck or RV or whatever, it just makes it easier. Of course, I never haul it that far. If I have to take it that far, I just load it in the tractor bucket and take it down there. I'm kind of lazy when it comes to like strenuous hard work, you know, like a lot of struggling. I don't want to struggle a lot, which is why I bought a tractor in the first place, you know, take care of some of that back-breaking work. But anyway, so the air compressor hassle has disappeared as of today. Like, I've never talked about it before, but believe me, every time, you know, and that's the thing, you don't take your air compressor out that often. You know, you only take it out once in a while. But when you do, it's like, oh, this damn thing again. I really should do something about those wheels. Well, now that's done, taken care of. So glad to have that out of the way. Anyway, I guess my point with that was sometimes just spend a little extra money and solve those problems so you don't have daily hassles. And it seems like we're going into a period here where there's going to be a lot of daily hassles coming up. I have some stuff I'm going to talk about that, you know, hopefully everybody's prepared for. And, you know, I just believe in being prepared all the time. But man, it's times like this that I start, you know, ratcheting things up a notch. And I'll give you a couple examples in just a minute. But I did want to say this is kind of a cool weekend. Oh, really? One thing I want to say is this time switch to 9 p.m. Eastern is awesome. Like, I got to work all day long today, just do stuff outside, take care of a bunch of things I wanted to take care of, and you know, didn't stop in the middle of the day to do the show, which was cool. I like doing it at that time slot when I was doing it, but I'm telling you, 9 p.m. Eastern, I'm loving it. So that was a great change. And remember, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern. Also, you can catch me live here on Real Liberty Media. And thanks for supporting the site and the show. If you haven't made a donation, feel free to come to Real Liberty Media and make a donation there. There's a donate button. And keeps the show going, keeps the site alive. And we do have a few shows going on now, and we're going to have more, I think, soon. So, a matter of fact, I'm almost positive we're going to have a new show starting maybe this Friday. I don't know. Not 100% sure. I'll check and get back to you on that. Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about some different things that we're doing on the homestead, like actively pursuing right now. As a matter of fact, today we also kind of, well, we got a source for milk, goat milk, which is, if you've listened to my previous shows, have probably heard that goat milk is really good for you versus cow milk, which is not really good for you. It's not bad for you, but, well, in my opinion, being a redneck, I don't think milk is bad for you. I believe in everything in moderation, you know. Take care of your health, but, you know, it's not bad for you. It's just goat milk is better. And you can catch an earlier show to see why goat milk is better. But my point is, we were thinking about getting some milk goats ourselves because things are going to get expensive. And, you know, the more stuff you can do for yourself, if you can, if you have the ability to do it. I mean, we just have this little 5 acres, which is more than enough. And honestly, I wasn't really looking forward to having goats again. In some ways, I was. I mean, goats are awesome animals. They're pretty dang easy to take care of. And as long as you can keep them contained, they're pretty they're pretty hassle-free. But, you know, there is some maintenance that goes into having goats, like trimming their hooves and milking them and making sure you keep them parasite-free using ivermectin, that horrible drug. But that's just one of the things anyway. But I wasn't crazy about the idea of doing all that again, but you know what? Tough times, man. You got to do stuff. And we do have the kids and grandkids around, so it, you know, probably could encourage some of them to take on some of those duties and learn how to milk a goat and trim hooves and stuff. I mean, they're getting to be those ages where they could really help out with some livestock, especially smaller livestock like that. It's pretty good size to, you know, start with. Speaking of the kids and grandkids, by the way, they're gone this weekend, which is kind of awesome. So Rochelle and I are home alone. The kids and grandkids took off to a little retreat for the weekend down on the coast, and they're, I know, riding their mountain bikes and camping and having a great time. So that's pretty cool. And guess what? We're going to do the same thing again next weekend, because next weekend they're going down south to California to visit some family. So, yeah, Rochelle and I are like living large here by ourselves. It was so quiet. It was so quiet, and we got so much stuff done, you know, and it was just so easy. You know, of course we miss them, but it's really nice to have that, you know, time alone. And man, just concentrate on getting stuff done. I'm going to tell you a kind of a crazy story that I didn't plan to, so oh well. Last night, let's say this is probably 80 yards from our front door is probably where our mailbox is. It's about 80 yards. Last night, I noticed a flashlight down. And it's just like, and Rochelle saw it too, and she was in the room next to mine, the studio here. And she said, "What's that flashlight doing down there?" I go, "I don't know, but I'm going to go see." Because this has happened more often lately, and it's worrisome because there's no reason for people to be up here. You know, we live in the country. Each parcel is 5 acres. And, you know, that's a wooded area right next to our mailbox. And we're thinking, okay, you know, I mean, who would be up there? So I get suited up, you know, hat, jacket, slippers, flashlight, you know, and personal defense. And I go out there and I see in the woods, I see like the side lights of a vehicle and then the tail lights because it turned and drove away from us. So one of the things we did today is we got on that new rig. We got that Tuatara utility vehicle. And took it for a ride and just kind of went and talked to all our neighbors. And as we went, we kind of looked at different vehicles and looked to see if we could find people camping in the woods and stuff. You know, kind of just do a check and chat with the neighbors and see if they'd seen anything or not. So that was kind of strange. We're going to put some cameras up and see if we can. I'm going to move one of my game cameras and see if we can identify who it is who's going over there in the woods there. But it's kind of strange, you know. And we noticed lately there's been some reports of people actually going into the country to steal catalytic converters because, of course, you know, like my property, I mean, I can't constantly surveil all 5 acres, you know, approaches from every different way. Now I have, you know, slow down or choke points, you know, so people would hopefully take the easiest routes. But you know, so and the thieves know that, so they'll just go out in the country, they'll find a place that nobody's there and just steal catalytic converters. It only takes them a couple minutes with the right equipment. And that's kind of a big deal here in Oregon now. It happens in the city of Portland all the time. So I don't know, but anyway, just kind of a weird thing that was happening. I can't remember if I talked last week about this dome that we added. It's about a 12-foot diameter geodesic dome that has a plastic cover that basically makes a real nice greenhouse. And it's pretty cool. We anchored it to the ground, so it's out there. It's going to, you know, be an additional place to start plants and start vegetables and whatever it is we're going to start this year. I'm just going to run down a few of the things that we are planning on doing just to prepare for a year when inflation is going to be high, and maybe I think there's good reason to believe there's going to be some kind of food shortages. And so the more you can prepare ahead of time for that kind of thing, I think the better it is. So we're going to order up our meat chickens probably this week. And part of the deal that we made with our goat milk source was that we would grow them some meat chickens, and then we will trade meat chickens for goat milk. So that works out pretty good because I don't know if you guys ever raised meat chickens. They're not difficult to raise. They're kind of difficult to keep alive toward the end because just imagine, you know, Jabba the Hutt just bellying up to the smorgasbord and eating constantly because that's what meat birds do. They're kind of disgusting in a way because actually, literally, they will get to the point where they're not even standing up because it sounds kind of horrible, but they just want to sit at the trough and eat. And I've heard that if you let them go too long, their legs are so weak, they'll break. Now, I've never had that happen, but it wouldn't surprise me, because they just sit there and eat, man, and just put on the meat, which is great. You know, it is great if you because you want a lot of meat on your birds. And they get to be about 6 pounds. I think we usually average between 5.5 and 7 pound birds in 6 weeks. And you get a little bit of loss. Like, we always plan to lose 2 or 3 birds out of 30, I think. So out of 50, probably 4, 5, 6 birds. And I don't know why. Just sometimes, you know, you start them out as little tiny chicks. And, you know, you're lucky if they all survive. I mean, stuff happens. Sometimes they just get trampled on. And we make a little chicken tractor, which is basically a rectangle PVC frame with chicken wire on it. And we start them off in the coop, but in a heated caged area, so that they can get their feathers on and, you know, survive cold nights. And once they're kind of fully feathered and won't get out of the chicken tractor, then we put them in the chicken tractor. The chicken tractor is just, like I said, a frame, PVC pipe frame, with chicken wire around it, and we put a couple wheels on one end, and we just pick it up and move it every day to a new spot on the property, so that, you know, as they eat and poop, they don't destroy the you know, if you leave them in one place, it's just going to be too much acid for the soil and the ground, and it'll just burn your pasture grass or whatever. So you move it around, and that way you get a nice fertilization of everything. And actually, in Oregon, you know, every few days it's probably going to rain, so it'll dilute that chicken poop and just help fertilize, you know, wherever you've dragged them to. So that's kind of handy. So we're thinking maybe we'll do 50 birds the first round, 6 weeks it takes to get them to full size, between 5 and 7 weeks. And there's a guy just down the road. He actually, his little business is, you know, processing small farm animals. So we'll have him do it. He doesn't charge too much. And then, you know, like, we figure if we eat one chicken a week, you know, that'll get us through a little over half the year, 30 weeks. And we may eat more than one chicken a week, but, you know, if times get hard, we'll be cutting back on the lavish lifestyle we live here on the homestead. That's kind of a joke, if you know what I mean. But, you know, we'll stretch meals a little bit more as we, you know, as we get into it. And I'm telling you, I started this list this week of all of the things that are going to affect food prices, and I think, you know, probably, you know, a lot of them. I mean, I'm going to get into it in a few minutes, but I was actually kind of shocked at all the pressures that's going to be on food prices. And not only that, I got to tell you guys, this was crazy. So I've been keeping a closer eye on my fuel, of course, because prices are going up, like, daily prices are going up. And so I was about at half a tank on the big Ford F-250 diesel. And so my tractor diesel can was empty also. So I thought, okay, I'll take my tractor diesel can and my truck, and I'll go to the little town and fill up. And I forget how much diesel was. It was really expensive. It was over 4, and I think it was close to 5, because I think I looked at, the guy and I were talking while we were filling the two things, and he said, you know, that's going to go up again. It's just going to keep going. I go, yeah, I know. I said, I'm staying on top of it, you know. But the pump tripped off before my truck was full, and I was like, wow, that's kind of crazy. And he goes, yeah. He says, well, there's a, you have a like a $75 limit. And I was like, thinking to myself, I've never hit that limit before, especially with just half a tank that I was filling. But sure enough, you know, with that 5-gallon can and half a tank of diesel in the truck, and you know, fuel being almost $5 a gallon. Yeah, guess what? It's kind of a shocker, you know, especially to some people. I was talking to my neighbors today too. They have a nice little Ford something car, you know, that gets great gas mileage, and they were telling us that when they first bought it, it was like 20 something, you know, $23 to fill it. And they go, yeah, we filled it today, and it's like it was over $50. And you know, for them, they're young people, they're like 20 something and just getting started in life, and that's got to be a hell of a shock. Although I kind of remember back in the 70s, remember the gas lines and shortages? Nah, some of you don't, but I mean, a lot of you were alive for that. And that was right after I got out of high school, I think. And yeah, you know, it was really expensive. Like, you didn't do a lot of just screwing around driving. You did, like, you know, purposeful driving then, and, you know, once in a while, maybe go on a Sunday drive with your lady friend or whatever. But, yeah, you didn't just go sightseeing or drive around just for the heck of it. Well, number one, you probably spend a ton of time in the line just waiting to get gas. And, you know, and then paying for that. And, you know, I mean, there was almost enough deterrent to keep you from driving, just thinking of how long you were going to have to sit in the line. And then I think we even had odd and even days. So, like, you know, you couldn't just go to the gas station whatever day you ran out of gas. You had to go on the day that, you know, you were assigned to go. And, it wouldn't surprise me one single bit if this actually came back. What's really sad about that is we could actually do something. I kind of alluded to this a little bit on Wednesday. We could fix it. I think we could fix it like in a heartbeat. You know, I've heard people say that if we, you know, that we can't just turn on oil production, but I 100% disagree. If you said you were going to turn on oil production, prices would immediately reflect that, or at least close to immediately reflect that oil was going to hit the market. Like I said on Wednesday also, I know there's a ton of pumps, a ton of wells out there that could be producing and would produce tomorrow if you said today to go ahead and turn them on. So my belief is we could actually fix this, but we won't. And that's going to be a pressure that's put on food. That is going to be one of the factors that's going to affect food availability and food prices, because we don't produce our own oil here. You know, we're, you know, the United States current administration has this anti-fossil fuel stance right now, which only means, remember, that we don't want to produce our own fossil fuel. It's okay to, you know, have other countries pollute their own skies and their own soils and their own, you know, people to give us oil, which I guess is what we're doing with Russia right now, because we're still taking their oil. And that seems, I mean, honestly, this is one of the worst ideas ever, I think, is to depend on another country for your source of energy. Because you can tell it's put us in a very weak position, because we can't, you know, the United States can't put the amount of pressure on Russia to get out of Ukraine as they wish they could, because they are dependent on Russian oil import right now. You know, we don't want to cut that off. We don't want to hurt them by not buying their oil, because we're not producing our own and not producing and not producing enough of our own, right? So we're kind of stuck in this place that you know, we're not producing ourselves. We have to take it from Russia. Russia's now doing its thing. And they probably know, hey, you guys are screwed. You guys have taken the stance to be environmentally, well, friendly to your own soil. And, you know, Putin probably knows that the United States is playing that game and is so entrenched in that belief, the current administration anyway, that they can't back off of it. They can't actually back off of it. And, yeah, we should have levitating cars already. Anyway, can't back off of that whole argument and start producing our own oil here in the United States, even though just 2-3 years ago we were doing it and we were doing fine. We were producing more than we were using. We were actually selling fossil fuels to other countries. That came to a screeching halt. And yeah, I think we're in trouble now. So think about all of the effects that not having your own fuels, how it's going to affect the entire chain. So if we're paying more for oil, or if there's less fossil fuel available, not only do the farmers, they're going, like right now, those farmers, the farmers who are producing food now in the United States are paying more for oil. They're paying more for diesel. They're paying more for gas. Some of the, I hate to say it, but some of the stuff that they spray on their fields are petroleum-based or have oil bases in them. All of those things are going to increase in price. Well, guess who's going to pay for that increase to the farmers? They're not going to absorb that cost themselves. They're going to pass that cost on to us, the consumers. And to get that produce from the farm to the market, guess how it's going to have to be hauled away by trucks, transported. It's going to be by trucks. Those trucks require diesel, require fuel, require gas. Who's going to pay for that gas? The truckers aren't going to absorb the cost of that themselves. They have to pass that on. So they're going to increase their charge, you know, for hauling that product to wherever it's going to go. So you already had an increase from the farmer because they're paying more. You're going to have an increase from the truckers because they're paying more. You know, by the time it does hit the market, it's going to be more expensive. You know, luckily, like, I don't really do much of our shopping here in you know, at Ravenwood. We call it Ravenwood. Rochelle does it, or Crystal does it. I generally don't do it. I mean, that's not true. Sometimes I get sent to the store to pick something up. I'll be honest with you, I don't even pay attention to how much it is because I don't care. I just want to get in the store and get out. So, you know, and hopefully get the right thing so I'm not in trouble when I get home, right? You know, because sometimes things have to be pretty specific. So, you know, my goal is just to go in, get the stuff, get out. I don't care how much it costs. But my wife tells me, you know, how much certain things have increased just in the last couple of weeks, you know, and she's kind of, and actually that's what started this conversation about milk, because, you know, there's got to have a drink. You guys drink with me. Bottoms up all. Oh yeah, that should help. You know, I think you need some very basic things to survive. I don't really think you need milk to survive, but it would sure make surviving a little more pleasant when things get really tough. So, you know, and with grandkids around and, you know, the kids, there's kind of a need to have some milk around. So that's where we started thinking about the whole milk goat thing again. You know, I had milk goats and meat goats for several years, about 20 years ago, on this property. So we're familiar with it. We're familiar with the milk and the meat and how all that works. And everybody has had that milk before, so we know they can do it. It's a lot easier than having a cow. It's a lot, I don't know, I shouldn't say it's a lot less expensive than having a cow, but it's easier. They're easier to move around and all that stuff. So anyway, just like talking about the price of milk right now is like, hey, we should find a source. You know, the neighbors, they have goats. There's two neighbors here that have goats, meat goats and milk goats. So we were just kind of looking around to see if any of them were going to breed their milk goats and if they were thinking about, you know, producing milk. And of course, you can't buy goat milk from a lot of farms because, you know, it's kind of, you know, milk has to go through this whole process. Anyway, it's just a big joke. I think the dairy farmers don't want you to buy goat milk because, you know, it cuts into their business. And they know goat milk is so much better. And so they kind of force these restrictions on small farms with dairy goats. But you can buy goat milk for your cats. You can't buy goat milk for human consumption from most farms unless they, you know, have the USDA approval or they say they homogenize milk or pasteurize it or whatever. But I'm telling you, if you drink raw goat milk, it is so damn delicious. I haven't met anybody yet who thought cow milk was better than goat milk, given it in a blind taste test. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, that's what kind of led to the whole milk thing and why I was talking about that. I was going to kind of go over some other stuff we're thinking about doing on the homestead this week. This is funny. I keep forgetting that I don't really need my glasses to be able to read. It's like I put them on for comfort once in a while, but then I take them off because it's such a hassle to look up and down. You know what I mean? Like look at the computer and look back at the paper. One of the other things, or kind of another category of things we're doing right now, is kind of looking at implements for our farm machinery, like the tractor. And we're not freaking out about it. Like we don't have our own tiller. We usually use one of our neighbor's tillers. So we don't really need one, but it would sure be nice to have one where you could, you know, you could just like hook up the tiller and till and know that it was yours, and you know, if it broke, no big deal. You know, and you didn't have to go begging for it. But really, our neighbors are awesome. And you know, we can always barter some food for using their tiller also, but they're pretty good at raising their own food too, so and pretty good at, you know, sharing their equipment. We're all pretty good at sharing our equipment. I got some forks to go on the bucket of the tractor this week too. You know, I was telling a neighbor, hey, I got these forks, so if you ever want to use them, you know, let me know. I'll show you how they go on, although it's not brain surgery. Pretty obvious how they go on, but sometimes it's easier if somebody shows you so you don't have to go, you know, take a couple stabs at it and get it wrong. I put them on wrong at first. I put the forks on the bucket right, but then there's this little piece of linkage that connects them together to keep them from slopping around. And at first, I put it on upside down, which really doesn't matter because it's just a wing nut that you can tighten with your fingers, but it was underneath instead of on top. And on top is easier because you just look down and, you know, you don't have to feel around for it and tighten it. You can just look at it and tighten it, but, you know, it wasn't a big deal. And actually would work either way, so. Oh yeah, and then just protecting the new trees we put in and protecting the garden. We got to go down and repair the 8-foot deer fence because dang deer. Even the 8-foot deer fence, they actually jumped into the deer fence in the last month and kind of crippled it enough that they made like a 7-foot like a 7-foot hole. Like they kind of smashed down the fence from 8 feet to 7 feet where they ran into it trying to go over it one time. And now, yeah, they just helped themselves to that 7-foot jump. So 8 foot's the magic number, at least for deer in Oregon. So we gotta repair that fence. That's what protects our garden. We gotta put some protection up around the trees that we put in this year, and we also today kind of put up some temporary protection around the blueberries, but we're gonna have to buff all of that up because food production, we're taking it serious this year, more serious than we have in previous years. But you know, the good thing is, in all those previous years that we didn't really take it that seriously, like, you know, I'm not saying we're depending on food this year, but we're acting as if we're going to be depending on homegrown food this year. So all those years past that we had a garden, no matter how small or how little effort we put into it, or, you know, how small of a variety of things we planted, at least we did that planting and turned the soil and mulched and composted, so that, you know, we kept the soil enriched in this area, so that now, you know, we're going to be more serious about it. And we're probably going to rotate some crops to make sure that we're constantly producing fresh food. We already know how to do it. We already know how the soil is going to react. And we already have a rainwater tank set up. It's got a couple hundred gallons in it. And we already have low flow watering system that waters underneath the leaves instead of spraying all on top. And is very efficient at watering. And that stuff is pretty inexpensive. And it's just kind of lucky for us that we have a little bit of a slope so that the rainwater collected, the tank of rainwater collection, actually will gravity feed that that low flow water line and water everything. You know, I don't have to turn my well pump. I mean, the well pump isn't working because this is a totally independent system. So that's kind of handy. And we also know, you know, what varieties of vegetables do better in different places. And, you know, at what time of year we have better luck with different things, and how, I don't know, like how much sun we want. You know, like where we want to put our jalapeno peppers or green peppers, I was going to say strawberries, but I meant tomatoes. All of that stuff, we've already done it a little bit. We've done it here and there. Sometimes we're much more serious about putting some vegetables in, and some years we weren't. We just had some radishes and some jalapenos and tomatoes. Kind of like the salsa mix, you know, some onions, tomatoes, jalapenos, and kept it simple. But this year, I mean, I'm taking this seriously. It's like, okay, you know, maybe nothing will come of it, but if it does, we're going to have some extra food this year. And actually, this is what I was thinking. I'm really trying to figure out what to plant in that north pasture. Like, we're just going to seed it right now, just put some pasture grass mix up there. Maybe some protein growth for deer antlers. And I don't know. I'm going to figure out what I would like, what would maximize my production in the long run. Like, I think you have to think of some foods that you can or preserve easily. And one of the things that, you know, we did last year, and I think everybody does, is put in some winter squash or pumpkins, because number one, they go deep into winter time before you have to harvest them, in Oregon anyway. And then they actually keep really well, and you can actually can them or, you know, whatever you're going to do with it. But that works out really good. And it's pretty easy to keep a patch of squash or pumpkin going. Harder to keep the deer out, but pretty easy to keep that going. I I was going to talk about some more of the, you know, things that are going to affect food prices. And one of the things I wanted to look at, so something I found out about Oregon this year, like last year, I don't know if you remember this, but the Klamath Basin, which sends a lot of its water to Northern California, didn't have enough water. And it was one of the first times they ever decided that they weren't going to give the farmers enough water to water their crops. And not only that, but they actually weren't even going to provide enough water for that stupid fish that's a non-native fish that they like to keep alive in the Sacramento River. I forget what it is. It's either a smelt or it might be a salmon or something. I don't know. But it's, you know, in my opinion, it's stupid to divert water to a non-native species in a river than it is to, you know, provide the water to the people growing food for the rest of the country and world. But so Northern California is going to have a problem again this year. But think of all the stuff that I mentioned before about the pressures on producing food that we're already seeing just because of the cost of fuel, and then you add on top of it the lack of water that Northern California is going to have again. And I was looking at a story in that Capital Press, that's an ag newspaper for the Northwest here. And they were actually talking to the reclamation people, which is, of course, a federal agency who kind of figures out how to send, you know, water to different places and how much they're going to have to send and how to increase that pool of, you know, that reservoir of water and who's going to get it. And I was thinking, okay, well, you know, what kind of crops does California grow? Well, here's just a sample. California grows rice, almonds, walnuts, plums, peaches, tomatoes, wheat, olives, corn, alfalfa, pears, sunflowers, grapes, kiwi fruit, and hay. That is a ton of food. And I don't know if you've ever been to California. You know, Northern California is probably the prettiest part of the state. The rest of it's pretty damn flat and ugly. Well, except for the Sierra Nevadas, I know, and the coastline's pretty beautiful. But, I mean, it's kind of perfect, you know, it's perfect ground for growing these crops. And actually, you can see, you know, like they actually grow rice in California. I didn't really ever think about that much, but that's pretty awesome that you could grow rice in California. I know, like in Oregon, I was surprised to find out that we grow a ton of cranberries for ocean spray. And I was like, well, where in the heck is that? And it's on the southern coast. There's two places, but mostly on the southern Oregon coast. But the thing is, you know, all of those crops I just mentioned are going to be affected by fuel prices and by drought. Because Oregon, even though we've had kind of a great season, it's kind of tapered off lately. And, you know, we're going to get back down to where, you know, all those reservoirs don't have, I'm thinking, are not going to have enough water, just like last year when they didn't have enough water to meet all the needs that they've already said that they need to meet the needs for. You know what's crazy to me, though? Like, there's a river directly across the street from my dental office. And that river responds to rain. Like, you watch the level in that river come way up. You know, in the summertime when it is at its minimum and we haven't had rain for 5 or 6 weeks, I've literally seen deer walk across that river and, like, you know, their hooves are barely wet. That's not true. It's probably like 4 inches deep. I almost said 6, but I knew that was an exaggeration. It's like 4 inches deep, and they just walk across this river. But so from that point, I've seen that river literally rise 30 feet above that level. Okay, 20 feet. But let's say, I mean, and it's the width at the highest point is probably 200 or 300 yards across. And this is just a raging river at that point. And the thing is, we don't use all of that water. Like, all of that water just goes off into the sea. And I'm not saying that we should use all of that water. But what's interesting to me is that somebody came along some time ago and decided that they needed to regulate who could take water out of the river. You know, when settlers came across the country, they plopped down next to water sources because, guess what? You need water. And then, you know, the federal government gets involved and it's like, well, we'll decide if you need water or not. And they take over the whole thing. And I'm not kidding. There's a town here in Oregon that's 30 miles away that actually has an ordinance, a city ordinance, that says if you collect rainwater on your property, you have to pay the city for it. It's their rainwater. I don't know how you could actually, I think you would have a pretty good court case going in and showing, having them prove which of the water is their water. It would be an interesting challenge, in my opinion. But again, you know, more pressure this year on food prices. You know what else? For the past 2 years, the federal government, all the tyrants have tried to destroy small businesses. And I don't know what the final count is going to be on how many small businesses have failed because of the, you know, ridiculous mandates and freedoms that were stolen from us in the last 2 years. But I would say it's pretty damn significant. Plus, I was thinking also, is anybody else kind of starting to think like this looks like a biological weapon and it was kind of timed for those 2 years to prepare us for what is coming next? Russia invading, starting war with Ukraine, and Beijing starting war. And, you know, we're already like depleted so much of our resources and our businesses. So many people lost their businesses. So many people, you know, already kind of poverty stricken. And then now we have, you know, now we have this war. We aren't producing enough energy, so prices are going to go up some more. A lot of those businesses aren't going to be able to reopen because the price of reopening is just going to be prohibitive. I mean, a lot of those businesses were service industry businesses. They were restaurants. They were cafes. They were coffee shops or donut shops. And all of those products are going to be affected by the increase in fuel cost, number one, and, you know, the increase in all of those supplies that they need, you know, food, wheat, flour, rice, vegetables, all of those things are going to have an increased cost associated with the, with, you know, our own lack of preparedness in the energy sector. There was something that I was going to say about the energy sector, and I've kind of lost. Oh, I know what it was. I thought it was really crazy that this week I heard that the Russians had taken over the largest nuclear power plant in Europe. And now, like, I'm not a genius. Like, I'm not. I'm, you know, a redneck from a small town in Oregon. Pretty simple life. I love life. I love doing what I do. But I'm thinking, what is the largest nuclear power plant in Europe doing in Ukraine? And again, one of those, oh, okay. But this is what didn't make sense to me. And actually another lesson we could learn is if Europe, the big general Europe, was, of course, building their nuclear power plants in somebody else's country so that they could use the power but not actually you know, be the sinners who built a nuclear power plant on their own turf, that's not going to make too much sense either. And just another one of those lessons you can learn. Like, hey, it's probably a damn good idea to have your own energy sources. And it's probably a good idea to produce enough of your own energy that when the S hits the fan, you aren't dependent on your enemy to provide you energy. Because guess what? That is not going to go over very well. It's just not. And you can bet, you know, if Russia's successful, which I really don't see how they're not going to be successful in this campaign, and they control those nuclear power plants, that power is going to become pretty expensive to the people who were buying that power. I would imagine they're going to make anybody who's buying that power who opposed them or helped the Ukrainians, they're going to make them pay the price for that. And it's not going to be pretty. And then I bet you would be wishing you'd have built a nuclear power plant for yourself, no matter what your, you know, whining Green Party had to say to you about it. Sometimes you got to bite the bullet, you know, to protect yourself. But if you're not, I mean, if your whole point is not to protect yourself and the people of your country, okay, do stupid stuff. Like give up your ability to protect yourself. Give up your ability to provide energy to yourself. Yeah, buy that from other people. Yeah, you know, have them extract the fossil fuels from the earth in their country so you look like the good guy. In the long run, you don't. You just look like a fool because you don't have the stuff you need to be a sovereign nation. Of course, I really truly believe that that's where we've been heading for years. So it's not really a big surprise to me that may be the goal. Kind of what I was saying a minute ago about this whole Wuhan man-made virus being set loose on the people. It seems like it was kind of purposefully done. I know there's plenty of stuff out there that points to this being a man-made virus that was let loose on the population of the world. Now, was it specifically let loose to set us up for this invasion by Russia into Ukraine and by China into, I think, Taiwan? I mean, that's probably what's coming. We don't have people in positions right now that are going to do anything to stop powerful people like Putin and China. We just don't. Besides that, I think some stuff has gone on that has weakened Biden's position. You know, I don't know what he and his family and his son has done, what kind of deals they made that's going to, you know, that puts them in a bad position. Even as president of the United States, he's going to be crippled in some way because of deals he has or stuff he's done in the past. Man, let's see. What else could I cover real quick before we go? No, we did that. Don't want to be too quiet. Everybody think I quit already, and I didn't. Oh, I'll tell you two more things that Oregon, man. Oh, if you don't live in Oregon, thank God you don't live in Oregon. So here's something else that we have to look forward to. The Oregon legislature has decided that farm workers here in Oregon should get overtime pay. Now, nobody actually asked the farm workers if they wanted overtime pay. You know, it's another one of those things where somebody was sitting on the outside saying, you know what, farm workers should get overtime pay. And farm workers are sitting there saying, hey, shut up. I like my job. Leave me alone. No, we're not going to leave you alone. because we want you to have overtime pay. So, of course, what are the farmers going to do? You remember the show I did just a few weeks ago about the autonomous John Deere tractor that will harvest the crops with no driver in it? You remember when they raised the minimum wage for, you know, everybody a couple years ago, and McDonald's went out and put kiosks in instead of people to take your orders? You just walk up to a kiosk now. Hell, you can do it by an app. You can order your food by an app, order your food in McDonald's at a kiosk because they didn't want to pay minimum wage to that many workers. Farmers are going to be exactly the same way. You think farmers are going to absorb the cost of hire? You know, a guy who puts in 70 or 80 hours a week, and they're gonna pay him overtime? Nope, not gonna happen. He's gonna start hiring more people at $30 an hour, 30 hours a week. I mean, you know, and just have more workers that don't ever hit overtime. And those workers are going to be pissed because, man, they've been making good money, sending it home, you know, making a better life for their family. And now they're going to be screwed because their hours are going to get cut. Instead of having the 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week that they were working, now they're going to be limited to 30 hours a week. Or I guess they could go try and get one of the service jobs that are still open, like, I imagine they're still have somebody flipping burgers in McDonald's, but I really don't know about that. They probably can automate all of that pretty soon. Anyway, you guys, thanks for joining me on our new time, 9 p.m. Saturday evenings. And, of course, I'll be back 9 p.m. Wednesday this week. Thanks for joining me. Always appreciate you guys being here. We are going to go out with something, whatever I click on here. This